Senate File 115, the what's been referred to as the invasive species legislation. Members, we're going to start right away here, and as we go through, we're going to address the issues that have concerns, and we'll let Mr. Knopf go ahead and start, and we'll be going working off the side by side, members.
Mr. Chairman and members, if you look at page R1 of the side-by-side, the first section, that was part of the Clean Water Partnership Bill, and the Senate Senator Gazelka carried that, 1354. This is the same as what's in his bill that's in finance right now, so I think you could adopt section 1's fairly technical.
Members understand that? Any questions?
Is that only on one side, though? So we need a motion to adopt that.
Looking for a motion to adopt section 1.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Any further discussion on section 1? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All, same sign.
And the House has section 2. My understanding, I mean, this is similar to the Rosen bill, and then it amends what was done in the agricultural bill that was enacted earlier this session. I don't know if the House wants to explain any more on that.
Any further discussion? Any further comment?
There's an amendment for that.
There's an amendment? Okay.
We may have an amendment for that.
For the next section.
It's actually in the next section.
Why don't you move this section?
I'll move this section we're on. The amendment is actually yet to come.
Any further discussion on the section that we just described? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
And then section 3 in the House, that's you've already adopted that in the Budget Conference Committee, the definition of biobutanol facility and biobutanol. So it's the same language, as I understand it.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A-12 amendment. I think it makes the bill consistent, if I'm not mistaken, with the language we adopted in our finance bill.
Representative McNamara moves the A-12 amendment. Any discussion? You all have a copy of it? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
And then, Mr. Chair, that didn't include Section 3, but unless you want to assume that it included Section 3.
Somebody to move Section 3?
Mr. Chair, I'll move Section 3 as amended.
Representative McNamara moves Section 3 as amended. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All same sign.
And, Mr. Chair, the next two sections are technical. They were in Senate File 692 in the Senate, Senator Hall's bill. You can move those, I think, as one motion here. 10 and 11 on the Senate and 4 and 5 on the House. It doesn't really matter which side you pick.
Senator Scoy moves those two amendments. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign.
And Mr. Chair, now I think we've got one that might take a little longer. This first, Section 6 here it was something that was in the original off-highway vehicle bill in the Senate, or Section 6, actually 6 is in the Senate's off-highway vehicle, so that's the same. But 7, the dual registration, is not in Senate File 920 that's being discussed on the floor as we sit here. So I'm not sure what you want to do with that. 6 is the same as what the Senate has. 7 is something the Senate isn't carrying any at this point in time.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Gazelka.
Is this where I could offer my GK013 amendment?
Pertains to the section?
I believe so.
Yes, Mr. Chair, this does a number of sections. This is the Senate version of the off-highway vehicle. It also, I want to point out, though, it includes, these are still trails. They're still in our area, but they were in the transportation. It also includes allowing bicycles with electric-assisted mechanisms to be operated on state trails and local trails that receive state funding.
This is the other difference.
The big difference on this, of course, between the House and Senate is on 1.24 to 1.27. And then there are also some other differences between this and the House provisions. And in fact, one of them is a dual registration for off-highway motorcycles, but that could be done separately.
Any discussion at all with regards to the amendment? Do you understand the amendment? Representative Dill.
Well, I'd like, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like Representative Hackbarth, if he's here, to come
Representative
up.
Representative Hackbarth.
Welcome testify. To the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, Representative Hackbarth, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hackbarth, could you explain to us how the House language practically works? Now, I know we're on the Senate amendment, but I think it's important to understand the two amendments, one versus the other, at least from the House perspective, so that all the members can understand where we're coming from as we're trying to understand where you're coming from.
Certainly. Mr. Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Dill. And Mr. Chairman, could I just, before I get into the explanation of the Class 1 and the Class 2, and I think that's what you're referring to, Representative Dill, are we talking also about the off-road motorcycle and the dual registration, or have you already adopted that?
It's in there.
No, it's not in this amendment. Gotcha. Well, Mr. Knopf, let's get the amendment clear here, which we're talking about.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hackbarth, that's not part of this amendment, but that doesn't mean it couldn't be adopted separately. But right now, Senator Gazelka is moving. It's just the Senate language that's in our transportation bill.
Mr. Hackbarth.
Well,
can you give a description as to what you feel about this particular amendment?
Well, the amendment is the amendment that was passed out. I'm a little bit confused. I didn't hear in the beginning. Is that the amendment that was passed out? Okay. And that's the definition of the Class 1, Class 2? Okay. Thank you. I just didn't hear what was going on and the process. The Class 1 and the Class 2 and the language in the House bill, members, puts this issue to rest. We say in the House language that a Class 1 machine is a machine that you have to straddle. And a Class 2 machine is a side-by-side machine. The Class 2 machines that are side-by-side have a steering wheel, and they're better known as razors or the side-by-side utilities. And they're much more maneuverable. They're faster. The razors are very maneuverable. And here's the issue, members. A number of years ago, we came up with a Class 1 and Class 2 because of the side-by-sides. The side-by-sides are getting more and more popular, and that's fine, and we need to have these two definite definitions. But we did that because we have two different types of trails out there. We have the very, very wide trails that are meandering through the woods, and we have Class 1 and Class 2 machines on those trails, and that's good. But the Class 1 trails are the more difficult trails, the more challenging trails, the trails that were built specifically for straddle-type machines with handlebars that are a little bit more of a challenge. And you put the Razor or the Class 2 machines on there, the side-by-sides, these trails are going to be widened and become the same kind of trails that the Class 2 trails are. I know that a number of folks carry legislation down here where they might have a bill and they really don't know what's going on with the bill, and they're not very familiar with some of the things that they pass down here. But members, I think you all know that I've been riding ATVs since 1973, since they were first invented. I know what these ATV trails are like. I know what these ATV trails have become. And the trails that I started riding on in 1973 that we started developing used to be what we call Class 1 trails now, the more challenging, the narrower trails where you had to pull over when you met someone. Well, those trails have now become the Class 2 trails, the wider trails where you can meet each other. And now the Class 1 trails, might be only 10% of the trails that we have out there are the more challenging trails that we want to keep challenging and not have the side-by-sides out there that are wider. And you know what's going to happen with the ATV, the Class 1 ATV trails, members? When we put these razors or these Class 2 trails or Class 2 machines on the Class 1 trails, what's going to happen, we've built these trails for the regular ATVs that you straddle with the handlebars. You go in between trees. You go in between rocks. You go uphill. And what's going to happen with these wider machines, members, is they're going to start going around these obstacles that we put into place so the trails could be more challenging. And you're going to have what's called webbing and going around things. And we, the environmentalists don't want that to happen. The ATV folks, the groups, don't want that to happen. We don't want that to happen to the Class 1 trails. We want to keep them challenging. So if you start putting Class 2 machines on Class 1 trails, those are the kinds of things that are going to happen. We want to keep them challenging. You put the Class 2s out there, you're going to start meeting side by side, they're going to start going off the sides. Those trails are now going to become Class 2 trails. It's just plain and simple. That's what's going to happen. We don't want those kinds of things to happen. That's why I came up with this language. Most states have the straddled language in their legislation. When they talk about a class A or a class B or a class 1 or a class 2, they define it a little bit different, but their class 1 machines have the straddle language. And that's why I brought this here today. If you do the amendment that says, the amount of inches or straddled and put that on the trail, and we're talking now mainly about the smaller rangers, eventually you're going to start having some of these problems. Do we want the conservation officers out there to now be carrying tape measures with them? I don't think so. I think it's easier for the conservation officers to look at a straddled machine and say, that machine belongs on the Class 1 trail, or that side-by-side does not belong on this Class 1 trail. Plain and simple. And that's the way we need to keep it. So there's a number of issues out there. I think it's a safety issue. You start putting the razors that are much faster and much more maneuverable than the other ATVs, I think we're going to start seeing some safety concerns. So, members, I have to tell you, I do know, if I know about anything, I do know about ATVs and I know about ATV trails. I might not know about education and some of these other issues that are out there, health and human services, but this is my area of expertise, and I would please ask you to reject the amendment that's being offered, and please accept the House language. And I'd stand for any questions.
Representative Hackworth, can you tell me how fast you're talking about these vehicles traveling? Because I have a four-wheeler that an Articat four-wheeler that goes 60 miles an hour. How much slower or faster do these vehicles go that you're talking about?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And they're much more maneuverable besides being very, very powerful. Some of these razors have very, very powerful engines, and they're much more maneuverable with the steering wheel, too, and they'll be able to whip around corners and things, and those are the kinds of things I'm talking about that are going to widen the trails also. As far as the engine size, it's going to vary on the engine size how fast they go, but some of the razors have much bigger engines than the actual straddled machines.
Members, any questions?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hackworth, forgive me. I'm not very many years behind you on using four-wheelers all the way back to three-wheeler Hondas. And, when I look at taking care of the roads or trails, I'm looking more at size and weight. And that's why this classification is this way. But I do know that we have Chris Georgicus, if I can say that right, wants to testify as well.
Any further questions from Mr. Hackworth? Okay, with that, would the DNR come up and weigh in on this before we do the industry? You can all stay up there. Myers, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources, and I believe everybody has received a copy of the letter that we submitted to you all about this conference committee. You'll see the first paragraph in the letter does discuss this language change, and actually, I feel somewhat responsible for being here with this provision today. We pulled together a stakeholder task force with the industry and also All Terrain Vehicle Association of Minnesota to talk about how do we classify these machines going forward. It seems every year, or at least every other year, we've been here changing the weight and the CCs of the Class 1 and the Class 2 machines, trying to get our arms around technology and where these machines are going. And I've been talking with Representative Hackworth about this, and I know his position well, but where we were trying to go goes to where Senator Gazelka was just at with his statements. The trail can support a machine of certain size. The weight, the CCs, that's an issue of the past. I think the system we have is designated. So we're looking at size rather than a certain weight, or 960 cc's are where we're at right now. How we started this discussion, there's some machines that are coming out that are class ones that are bigger than the 960 cc. They aren't these huge machines, but they do fit in the class one system. And rather than come in and tweak the weight, we thought, well, let's see if we can fix this definition altogether. And that's where the stakeholder group came in, and the definition is contained as the group recommended in the Senate language. As that bill was moving forward, we also had a language that was in Senate File 920, or is in Senate File 920, that prohibits these Class 1 side-by-side all-terrain vehicles from the ditch or the outside bank of, or slope of a trunk, county, state aid, or county highway, except if it's part of a designated trail system or grant nature system. So trying to address some of that speed is where we are at with that. So, Mr. Chair, members, that's how we got to where we are today.
Any questions? Hearing none, maybe we can get somebody from the industry to come up, please. Thank you, Ms. Mark.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the conference committee, my name is Chris Jorgikis, representing Polaris Industries. I would add to Mr. Meyer's comments that
representatives. Pull the microphone to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Polaris Industries, Articat, represented by Mr. McAsey. I also believe also Bombardier, represented by Mr. Grooms. All three manufacturers were participants in the stakeholders series of meetings that Mr. Meyer described. We are all in support of the amendment, which is to say the Senate language. That was the language originally developed by the stakeholders group. I would just add for clarification's sake that the small side-by-side vehicles that are currently allowable on Class 1 trails have a manufactured top speed of 50 miles an hour. There are a number of straddle type machines that have top speeds in excess of 60 miles an hour.
Anyone else?
Mr. Chairman, Bert McAsey on behalf of Articat. I really have nothing to add to what Mr. Georgic has had to say, but Articat 2 is in support of the amendment.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Lloyd Grooms, representing Barbier, and I would simply echo the same comments.
Questions, members, from industry, or Representative McNamara?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and for one of the three industry testifiers, I'm trying to understand for the general public, it seems it would be very easy to know that if you're sitting side by side, you go on Class 2 trails and you're a Class 2 ATV, and if you're a straddle ATV, you're on the Class 1 trails. And then just also, it seems to me all the Class 2s I'm familiar with have the rollover bars, and I'm wondering how does that work on the Class 1, on the trails that the Class 1s normally would be on, and overhanging branches and such, if the straddle ones, I don't believe, come equipped with rollover bars.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, the narrow side-by-side vehicles that you described typically are equipped with a roll bar. Those are typically equipped. I think that they are certainly lower profile. The seats are configured so that they are lower to the ground than a typical straddle seat, but in terms of the overall height, it's not a significant difference. Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, the industry representatives and the other stakeholders agreed that Minnesota's definition specifies a number of different criteria. And if you look at the ATV definitions in other state statutes, there's been a trend in recent years to take out a number of criteria that simply do not work anymore, that are unnecessary. The past legislatures have increased both engine capacity and weight over a number of years. As Mr. Meyer testified, this is an attempt to try to eliminate the almost every year rejiggering of this particular definition to embrace those criteria that are really significant for purposes of distinguishing what is appropriate on a Class 1 and Class 2 trail. And the stakeholders group agreed that width and weight are the two main criteria that should be applied.
Thank you.
Any further questions, members? Senator Gazelka.
I'd like a roll call on this.
Any further questions on the Gazelka amendment? Hearing none?
Mr. Chairman? Could I just have a closing statement? Members, these razors and Class 2s are allowed on Class 1 trails right now as a result of some legislation that was inadvertently passed just a couple years ago. Side-by-side ATVs were never allowed on Class 1 trails. There was a mistake that was made a couple years ago in legislation to allow these side-by-sides on these Class 1 trails. So they've only been allowed on Class 1 trails for about a year. And all Class 2s, all side-by-sides, right now, because of that inadvertent change, are allowed on Class 1s. We need to change this legislation. But to allow this to happen is the wrong way to go. You're going to allow side-by-side machines on the Class 1 trails, and conservation officers will see side-by-side machines on there. Do we want them to get out a tape measure, carry a tape measure with them to see how wide the thing's going to be? Are we going to have them check to see what the weight is? I mean, that's just ridiculous. I mean, it's going to be easier to enforce knowing that an ATV that's a side-by-side shouldn't be on certain trails and shouldn't be in certain areas. The legislation that the House has simplifies that and puts it back to the way it was. That's my final word. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
Representative Dill.
Well, thank you. Mr. Georgakis, could you stay for a second? Chairman, Bill. I have to ask Representative Hackbarth. I kind of resemble that remark in that I think it was Mr. Georgakis that came to us and asked to us to change the law. I'm referring to Senator Chaudhry and I, because the industry needed to be able to put on these eco-friendly battery-powered ATVs. And I think that you're referring to what we did, trying to respond to the industry, and now we have the industry, and I'm feeling like we're trying to go the other way, and I'm concerned about that because we tried to accommodate on this, caused an inadvertent set of circumstances that has occurred. I mean, after this happened and during the interim, my phone rang off the hook about people who had what they believed and were sold a Class 2 ATV, a Razor specifically, and they were calling just freaking out because now they were no longer a Class 2 and they couldn't ride along the roadsides legally. So is this what you're referring to? And I mean, I think what I sense here is, in part at least, we're trying to undo what Senator Chaudhry and I screwed up because of the industry.
Georges?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dill, you're correct that what Representative Hackbarth was referring to was the inadvertent or unintended consequence as a result of the increasing of the weight of both Class 1 and Class 2 vehicles last year. And you're right, Representative Dill, that it was at the instance of industry to allow for electric-powered vehicles, which have considerably greater weight because of the heavy batteries they carry. Nevertheless, since that time, a number of these narrow razor vehicles, which have been in the market, I think, for roughly the last 3 years, have been registered legally as Class 1 vehicles. We know that, at least with respect to Polaris Industries customers, there are a number of customers who have these vehicles registered as Class 1. I know that other manufacturers, however, as you've seen in the last few minutes, also believe that the language that was developed by the stakeholders group under the auspices of the DNR should go forward if the legislature were to make a change in the statute. Both the company I represent and I think the other manufacturers are constantly innovating. They're looking at developing new product. They understand that if the state specifies a certain set of criteria, that their vehicles fall into currently one or the other category. But I know that there are customers who have vehicles registered currently as Class 1 vehicles, these very narrow razor vehicles, which were intended for trail use. It was inadvertent as a consequence of last year's legislation, but the reality is there are Minnesotans now who have these vehicles. They're riding them on Class 1 trails. They are certainly slower speed than many what you would consider a conventional straddle-type ATV.
Chairman? Representative Dill.
Well, thank you. I guess I'd like to hear from enforcement for a second, if they could come up from DNR enforcement.
Representative Lemire, you had a question too?
Yeah, that's out. Did you say that you were from Polaris? Is that what you said?
Mr. Chairman, I represent Polaris Industries. That's correct.
How wide is the Razor?
The Razor, the narrow Razor vehicle that we're talking about right now is under the 50 inches, which is what would be permissible under the language that's before you.
Yep. Do you know how wide that is, though?
I believe it's 48 inches.
48, okay. And is there any other side-by-sides on the market that would fit under that criteria also?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lemire, I don't know that there are other products offered by other manufacturers. I can't speak to whether they intend to offer them in the future.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Representative Dill, you'd like some DNR up again, enforcement? Major, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Major Rodman Smith, Operations Manager for DNR Enforcement. Mr. Chair, Representative Dill, I was part of the stakeholder group conversations that went on that the DNR hosted with the stakeholders and the manufacturers. And some of the concerns that you'd raised in the past kind of echoed in my head about measuring these vehicles. And if you look at the amendment, subdivision 9, I guess it'd be line 1.27, some of the input that I was able to bring to the group was to have it as the manufacturers published with, I kind of saw ahead that a lot of the times these folks, especially ones that are real serious about the sport, will change out tires and they could be 50 inches one day and 53 inches the other day. And I think my comment was I want my officers measuring fish, not ATVs and whatnot. So we had the manufacturers published with language put in there so that it would be the width at the time of registration as published in the manufacturer's literature.
Well, Major Smith is very good at premonitions because he anticipated my exact question without me asking it. Thank you.
Comes with a little experience, I would guess, working around here. Representative, do you have a question? Any further questions? Any further questions to the amendment? To the Gazelka amendment. Take the roll.
Senator Scoy.
Aye.
Senator Carlson.
Aye.
Senator Dames.
Aye.
Senator Gazelka.
Aye.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Aye.
Representative McNamara.
No.
Representative Hancock.
No.
Representative Dill.
Nope.
Representative Dopke?
Dopke.
Dopke, I apologize.
No.
Representative Lemire.
Amendment does not pass.
Mr. Chair, I would, if it would be in order, I would just move the House position on all the ATV provisions.
Representative McNamara moves the House positions on the ATVs. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair, if Mr. Knopf, if I'm not mistaken, it's a few different sections, maybe could identify which sections they would be.
Mr. Chair, it's if you look on R3, it's Section 6, Section 7, dual registration. Section 13 and 8 are the same. That's at off-road vehicle trail, state trail pass. That's the same, and it's also the same as what you have in your budget bill, so you could adopt that here, too, as long as the language is the same, not knowing where that one's going to be going in the future. And then it's Section 9. If you go to R5, Section 9, Section 10, Section 11, Section 12, Section 13, and then you need to go further back. We've got some other sections that are coded later in statute, so they show up later in this document. It would be starting on page R52 on the bottom, and then R53, it'd be Section 87 on the House, Section 88, and they do have a vehicle in here that's different from the Senate, this utility task vehicle. That was not in the Senate bill. I just wanted to alert people to that. On R54, again, we deal with it's basically the same except for the utility task vehicle language on the House side. And so that would go, and I think you'd probably want to look at Section 90, 90, 90, 91, 92, 93. 94, and I think 95, because that's the recreational vehicle manufacturer being able to use non-oxygenated gasoline for testing purposes. That was also in the Gazelka amendment that's in Senate File 920. So I think those would be the sections that you would be talking about.
Any questions? Representative Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe we should. I'd like to ask a question of Major Smith again, if he could come up. I see maybe he just left.
I'm here. We're calling you up.
Because it doesn't feel to me like the House language will pass either. And but maybe I'm wrong. I'm hoping I'm wrong. But I'd like to ask a question about the practicality of that.
Major Smith, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could have their question repeated, please.
I have Representative Dill
for a second.
Thank you. I haven't got there yet. I'm surprised you didn't figure out what I'm going to ask next. Major Smith, if the House language doesn't pass and the current law stays as it is today that Chaudhry and I passed a few years ago, how will you practically enforce razors on the side of the road? Because technically the way the current law is, as I understand it, they're not legal on the side of on roads or on the side of roads. And I'm asking you to tell me how you would instruct your officers to treat these side-by-side vehicles, that it's a mere technicality that they don't meet the Class 2 language. And you know my fear, and I've expressed my fear, is that people have bought these, dealers have sold these. They have been categorized as Class 2 ATVs since their inception. And even though some have been now registered as Class 1, how would you practically deal with this until such time that we can come to a Waterloo on some language?
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dill, members, it's going to be a challenge because technically they would be registered as a Class 1, but our officers more than likely are going to stop them. And then they're going to realize that they are in fact registered as a Class 1 ATV. So it'll take some time for us to educate our officers a little bit on seeing these, especially if an officer is driving northbound and the machine is driving southbound and they pass it's kind of a blur. They're not going to recognize the make and model of the vehicle. They're just going to see it as a side-by-side. And so they'll probably swing around and make the stop and have to go from there. So it'll be a little bit challenging.
I don't have any more questions.
Any further questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator
Gazelka. Like a roll call, please.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to speed it up. I'm going to ask to lay all these sections that Mr. Knopf has just moved beyond them right now, and if we could continue on with the rest of the bill. As Representative Dill has so ably noted, I think we all have the ability to count, and we have a lot before us. So.
Mr. Chair, members, move to R7. I think that was the next. Yeah, well, it's the bottom of R6. The definition of decontaminate. The Senate language actually has the name of the report and who did it, because it wasn't a Fish and Wildlife Service report. I would recommend the Senate language on this. The only other difference is the House requires if the Department develops decontamination protocols that are different, they have to be published in the register, whereas the Senate just says that they're supposed to be developed by the commissioner. This is just because when you inspect, you can require decontamination. It's not like you're going to require broad decontamination, but as part of the inspection. So those are the differences in that. Do you want to just do these one at a time, unless there's a number of sections that are the same?
Maybe we should do a page. How would that be?
The next two sections, as I understand it, are the same. The definition of inspect should be the same. Inspector, there's just some technical differences. On the Senate side, we clarify how they're trained and where they're trained in the law so people can find it. The House just says that they're trained.
Everybody understand that? Senator Deems moves that we accept page R7 as described by Mr. Senate. Knopf. Sorry. The Senate language, yes. Any questions? One more discussion, hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All same sign.
And, Mr. Chair, and I'm ignoring at the bottom of these sections, it says effective the day following final enactment. I think that's a decision for later. I'm not going to mention each individual section because the Senate had it June 13th and the House had it day after enactment. We can get to that when we get to talking about the effective date, so I will not note those differences at this point in time. And Mr. Chair and members, I think I can safely say that everything on page R8 is the same.
Okay. I think
you should.
Move the House? The Senate.
Well, since we're on the Senate, the Senate's on the left side, do the Senate.
Okay. Senator Gazelka moves the Senate positions on page R8.
Mr. Chair, you could also go to R9, too, 10, I guess.
As well as R9.
Here, let's go to R10. Through 5.13 on R11.
Everybody understand that motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All same sign.
Mr. Chair, in R11 we have a Senate-only provision dealing with notification. It requires that a person, if they find it and identify an aquatic invasive species, that they're supposed to notify the commissioner or an inspector.
I think we're okay.
Within 48 hours.
Okay. Members understand that provision?
There's no motion. Let's move on.
We took this out on our side.
Okay, you can move on.
Yes, sir. I don't hear a motion. We'll move on. Section 13 on the Senate, 25 on the House. That's the same, so is section 14 and 26 and 15 and 27. Those could be moved all in one. Be 13, 14, and 15 on the Senate.
Senator Gaines moves.
So move.
Any discussion, members? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
And then, Mr. Chair and members.
Please, members, bark up if you don't. If we're going too fast here.
Mr. Chair, in the next section, there's one small difference in language, and you'll see on 7.30, you'll see portable bait the Senate continues to allow portable bait containers used by licensed aquatic farms, where the House is excluding portable bait containers completely. And the Senate, after talking with some of the aquatic farm people, offered to allow them to continue because they're also going to, they're going to be in quarantine for 10 days afterwards.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, what our page are we on, please?
R13.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for that, because we're moving along kind of quickly here. So,
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Knopf, would you repeat that change?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if you look on 7.30 to 7.31 on the Senate, you'll see that the Senate allows portable bait containers that are used by licensed aquatic farms to continue to be exempt from disposing of the water. In the House, the portable bait containers are specifically excluded, all of them. What the Senate did was just add back in the licensed aquatic farms.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, is the DNR okay with this provision on these portable Mr.
Anybody here from the DNR that would like to comment? Mr. Hirsch, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members, Steve Hirsch, Director of Division of Ecological and Water Resources for DNR. And the question, if I understand it right, is if we're okay with the Senate language, 7.27 to 7.30.
No,
7.31 to 7.31, right?
That's
correct. And we are.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move the Senate language.
Representative McNamara moves the Senate language. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign.
And, Chair, so we'll move on to page R14, section 17 on the Senate, 29 on the House. There's a couple of differences here. Some are fairly technical. If you look on 8.11 on the Senate and then 14.20 on the House, I just rewrote the sentence so I thought it read a little better from what the department brought in for language. I also thought splitting up the paragraphs in subdivision 2 made sense. But there is a substantive difference that I want to make sure you know about. If you look on 8.26 on the Senate, you'll see that they can inspect at any public location in the state or a private location where the watercraft or water equipment, that should really say water-related equipment, is in plain view. Whereas the House says any other location in the state. The Senate had the same language as the House, but when it went through the Judiciary Committee, they wanted to more narrowly focus that.
Members, any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Gazelka.
Which one is, so I'm trying to figure out, is the House less invasive? In other words, which one could you look in their garage?
Oh, Mr. Chair, Senator Gazelka, the discussion in Judiciary was under the House provision. They were concerned that you'd be able to look in somebody's garage.
Representative McEnery?
I thought the DNR wanted to weigh in on it.
I think they did. Mr. Meyer, welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members, Major Rodman Smith was just bringing attention to me about the provision right above that related to emergency response equipment. There is a difference in those two provisions as well. I want to make sure you're aware.
Oh, so. Mr. Chair, yeah. Oh, that's right. You did talk about that. I forgot about that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Mr. Knopf, could you, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if Mr. Knopf, I do not remember discussion of that difference. If you could explain what that is.
The one on the top of the page? Do you want to do the, or you want to move back, or you want to deal with this?
Representative McNamara.
We do need to talk about a difference, another
okay.
difference.
I'm sorry, I am going too fast. Mr. Chair, let's just first do what the two Mr. Knopf talked about. I'm okay with both of those. I think, Mr. Meyer, the Senate change clears up that sentence. It is a little easier to read in the lines on the House file. It was lines 1420 to 1423. The Senate language seems to be a little more clear. Senator Gazelka mentioned the ability in the House bill about going into a private closed garage. I would prefer the Senate language to that. And I guess I would like to deal with those two and it looks like the DNR is okay with the Senate language. So if I could move those two differences, I would move the Senate position on those two items before we get into the one that Mr. Meyer raised.
Representative McNamara moves those two provisions. Any questions?
Mr. Chair, just with the addition on 8.27 hyphen related, and the Judiciary Committee didn't quite get that term right. It's a term of art that we're using now throughout the invasive species. It should be water-related equipment.
Yes, I would put that in with my amendment. Incorporate it. Too big a word today, Mr. Chair.
Representative McNamara moves that amendment as described by Mr. Knopf. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
And, Mr. Chair, if we could back up to the top of the page, then Mr. Meyer brings up a point that I went over this a little too quickly, and there is a difference on transportation, the exemption for emergency response vehicles. On the Senate side, the response vehicles and equipment are only exempt from it when they're being used in an emergency. Then they're exempt from the requirement to pull the drain plug, whereas in the House, it's any emergency response vehicle and equipment would always be exempt from having the plug pulled while they're operating on the highway.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I made the motion in committee to make this change. I think the first responders brought this as an issue to us that they didn't want to be responding to an emergency, get to the boat landing where they're going to put their airboat in or whatever and be monkeying around putting the drain plug in, that as long as they removed all the water and complied with all the law prior to that, that they could put their drain plug in so they're all ready to go and they don't have that delay. It seems like a reasonable request.
Members, any further questions?
Is he going to move the Senate?
Senator Scoy moves section.
It's just paragraph E.
Excuse me, 8.4 through 8.7, the Senate language.
8.4 through 8.7.
Further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Hold on.
What? Sorry.
Mr. Chairman, sorry about that. The concern is that are being used, is this literally interpreted as that boat that is going to be used that day? Or maybe it should say that will be used or may be used for? Our concern is that the Senate language may be limiting into certain equipment. So you have to put the boat in, the plug in right before you're responding as you're leaving the station or as you're going there. The intent that we were looking for in this language was that a water safety equipment or a water patrol sheriff boat, we pull it from the lift, drain it, make sure it's clean, put the plug back in, and then you could leave the plug in there. Our concern is that maybe the Senate language might be too limiting, just that being used, that are being used. Maybe we could just make sure, actually, if the intent is that boat or water-related equipment that would be used for these purposes, we can keep the plug in there.
Senator Scoy.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Myers, my intent is that after they comply with the law by draining the water, they can put the plug back in. If it's sitting on the trailer in the fire shop or on the lift, or whatever they're doing with it, it can have the plug in because they've drained all the water and complied with the requirement. If there's a language change that's needed, I'm fine with it.
Mr. Knopf, do you understand that? Is that clear?
Well,
your guesstimation?
Mr. Chair, it sounds like Senator Scoy almost likes the House provision better if that's the intent. I mean, I would consider on the way to the landing and coming back from the landing as part of the response, as part of the emergency response. So if that's the issue, but if they're just being used for other purposes and not emergency response, then I would say the Senate language would say you have to take the plug out and leave it out. But if you're at the station and you're going out for emergency, you can put the plug in before you left.
Mr. Chair.
Representative McNamara.
It would have been easier if the Senate would have just concurred last Friday. We are really in the weeds, Mr. Chair.
We don't do things easy. Would you like to respond?
Looks like the House language is better.
Yeah.
Let you just, yep. House language.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the House language 14.4 through 14.6.
Senator Scoy moves the House language. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign.
Mr. Chair, that was for Representative McNamara.
That's right, yeah.
Thank you, Senator Grzelka.
Sure. All right, now we've got on the bottom page, R14, we've got sections 18 and 30 are the same on both sides. Also, sections 19 in the Senate, 31 in the House are the same. Sections 21 on the Senate and 33 on the House are the same. You could move all of those sections with one motion.
Also moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lemire moves that section. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All same sign.
Now, Mr. Chair, we come to the civil penalties, and there's where there's a fairly significant substantive difference in that on the Senate side, the penalties are increased. A number of penalties are doubled, and then it also allows for doubling of all of those that are for second, third, and fourth offenses. Under current law, there's one that can be doubled, and that's the placing or attempting to place into waters of state water. Well, it's boats under current law, equipment that have prohibited invasive species on them, and so that's the only one that would still be allowed to be doubled under the House. They just leave it in current law. But the Senate includes increases in fines, and then again, if you look on page R17, you'll see paragraph B that also allows for further elevated penalties for second and subsequent offenses.
Mr. Chair, I would like to have a discussion and move the Senate language, primarily because that I believe that the higher level of penalties is certainly justified. I know the author of this particular bill in the House feels this particular way as well. We have I'm from the Lake Minnetonka area. We have just discovered invasive species in Lake Minnetonka. We have over 250,000 visitors to the lake on an annual basis. This is a very important provision for us, as well as the author in the House on this bill from Brainerd and the Mille Lacs area. Invasive species, particularly zebra mussels, once you receive them, along with milfoil, you are unable to actually use the lake for recreation in many ways. And so I would like to move the Senate language, and I would like to have Mr. from the DNR, if Bob, you would come forward and talk to this. Bob has been working for over a year with all of the stakeholders in my area, and I would like him to just speak to this particular provision.
Representative Delpino.
If I may.
Mr. Chairman, members, Bob Meyer, DNR. The civil penalties and the criminal penalties that are in the bill have been a point of some debate, I think it's safe to say, in both bodies. And it was one of the big things that came up with our stakeholder process over the interim. Actually, people wanted these penalties and citations to go a lot farther than they are right now. People are talking confiscation, talking about $25,000 penalties and things like that. And while I know that that is pretty stiff, there's a lot of people out there who want to see stiffer penalties than are in the bill right now. We did have some concern with this in the Senate and the House, Judiciary and Civil Law Committee in the House. So it is a delicate balance in the bill right now. But you will hear from other people, and I think our testimony for the record said that in the House, when these penalties were put at the level they are, that we will need to come back and revisit this piece of the bill at some point if they stay at that level, because this is something we need to do. You look at the other penalties that are in place in the game of fish law, for example, the penalties we have for possibly contaminating a lake with zebra mussels are very small compared to a gross over limit of fish or a poaching of a deer, for example. So it's trying to find that delicate balance, and it's something that the Senate position meets. It goes along with the bill that we had as introduced in the House language, basically reduced that in half. So we do support the Senate language as well, but we understand the concerns that took place in the House.
I would like to have a vote on this, please. Particularly, I think that we have a responsibility to stop the spread of these invasive species. They change the nature of the fishing in our lakes, the nature of the use of the lakes, and so therefore I would like to move the Senate position.
Thank you. Representative McNamara.
I renew my motion about you should have concurred.
Would you discuss the difference between fines and fees for me, please?
No. Mr. Chair and members, this is a delicate balance, as Mr. Meyer has said, and going forward, this is new territory for us, and we are going down a road where it should be about education and cooperation, and we've heard that over and over from Major Smith, how that was the direction they wanted to go, how they've been going that way. And Mr. Meyer did talk about significant fines for the taking of trophy whitetail or confiscating expensive vehicles when they're used in the taking of trophy whitetail and such. But members, that happened after years of those laws being on the books when we had a better feel for the situation. This is not the right direction to go right out of the chute. While I'm glad that Representative Depke's on the conference committee, I will disagree with her and will be voting no. Thank you.
Representative Hancock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it is a delicate balance again, and I think there's a big difference between us combating aquatic invasive species and trying to regulate the taking of fish or animals, deer specifically. Here, the intent is different. If you're taking a trophy deer or you're taking too many fish, you're actually weighing the penalty as opposed to the activity. And I think what's happening here in aquatic invasive species, there are very few that really want to contaminate our lakes. And what I'm concerned with in increasing the fees too much is this, that we think that is going to be the cure to the problem. And we emphasize the law enforcement aspects of combating aquatic invasive species. In my opinion, we need to really look at best practices. We need to up our ability to decontaminate at certain sites. We need to involve the COLAs and the people out here that have not only the desire to combat this aquatic invasive species, but to also that we have the knowledge, and we need to incorporate that. And I think it's the attitude of us working together, both as lawmakers, as the DNR, and as the general public, that is going to meet this challenge greatly. And I think sometimes fines and excess penalties and that really divide us rather than bring us together. So I think we have to be careful in upping the fees too greatly.
Thank you, Representative Hancock. If I just might make a comment with regards to that, I certainly understand that, but the word fee again came out, and I just want to make everybody understand that this is not a fee. This is a sanction. This is like going down the road speeding. If I'm going down the road speeding, I pay the fine. Senator Scoy doesn't have to pay for it. If there is a difference, so
I misspoke on that. I meant fines.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know how many of you live on lakes. I live on a lake. I think Representative Hancock lives on a lake, and I think at this point my lake is clean, I hope, of invasive species. I don't know about Lake Beltrami, but I guess what I would say to Representative Hancock is I sure as heck don't want this stuff getting in my lake, and if it takes doubling of a fine, not a fee, for someone that's not paying attention, I guess I'd be all in favor of that.
Senator Scoy.
Well, being that those of us from that represent Beltrami County are speaking, I feel obligated here. But really, when you think about the issue in relation to the damage that's potential to the environment, the aquatic invasive has a lot more potential damage to a lake than the overtaking of a few fish. And it seems to me that in order to get folks' attention about the serious nature and the potential damage, that this is a real reasonable step to be making. And, you know, I would concur with Senator Carlson and support the increasing of these fines. It's still relatively modest in comparison to some of the other penalties that can be levied by the DNR.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would like to renew my motion to accept the Senate language, and I would like a roll call, please.
Roll call's been requested. I'd just like to make a couple comments myself. I live in a county where there are infested lakes, and I guess I would like to do what I can, and hopefully some of this legislation, and I think it will. I think it's been a bipartisan effort, as well as the governor's weighed in on this and knows the importance of getting this this thing addressed. And moving forward, we're going to have to get tough with things, and I agree with those that are agreeing with the Senate language. I just give you one other analogy, if I may. We recently went down to the CWD problem that they had in Pine Island, where there was that deer that was located, and the DNR was there and did a great job of testifying as to what was going to have to happen with the neighbors and how the property owners were going to do that. And then he got into this idea of feeding deer, and the feeding deer had to stop. They had to terminate doing that because we had a tough winter down there. And of course, your general feeling is let's feed the deer so we can keep those beautiful critters around. Well, that's where they actually come together and swap saliva, quite frankly, and that's where this disease does transfer back and forth. And then the questions started coming from everybody, and I'm going to make my point real quickly here. The questions started coming from everybody. Well, what's going to happen if we have this little pile of feed here and pile of feed there? Finally, the CO that was there came up to the front of the room and said, "You're going to be arrested." That pretty much took care of the questions about feed. So my point is that if you're going to get serious about things, you can beat around the bush a lot, but some folks are going to only understand paying a fine and a good sanction if they're breaking the law. So I too would ask for a positive vote for the Senate side.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dill.
Question of enforcement again.
Question of enforcement.
Mr. Chair, again, for the record, Major Rodman Smith, DNR Enforcement Operations Manager.
Major Smith, you're not going to be able to figure out what I'm going to ask here until I ask. Mr. Chairman, so I live in a national park that's infested with invasive species. National park, by the way, the only one in Minnesota. And
I'm wondering, those are all border lakes for many hundreds of miles.
Representative Dale, could I bother you for a second? We do have to take a vote, so I'm going to have to put it into a small recess real quickly here. We're on the Senate floor, so if that's all right, maybe.
No, that's fine.